Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
And welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton, and with me is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
Doing great, Ryan. I'm in the middle of a four-day weekend, and what makes it even better is that there's no Timberwolves games on to like stress me out about. So I'm feeling pretty good. I can actually relax and like go about my day without having my day ruined or having to rely on them winning. So yeah, doing pretty good.
Yeah. Just a kind of a stinker of an all-star game. I didn't even pretend to try to pay attention to what happened, but it sounds like I didn't miss anything. So that's great.
Yeah, it was, I would say Timberwolves-less this weekend, but Leonard Miller did play. I did put up a little piece on Candace Hoopus. Those of you who want to know a little bit more about Leonard Miller and the Iowa Wolves, if you're a true Wolves sicko, go ahead and tap into that. But other than that, yeah, Ant unfortunately did not play due to a sore groin. There's a lot of punchlines we could be making about that, but let's just say he's taking it off for rest, which is, in all honesty, if we're talking about Wolves basketball, that's probably for the better. Not that they play hard at all in the All-Star game, but like, you know what? He doesn't need to be associated with it. When we look back on this travesty of an All-Star game, we won't be able to see Ant. He wasn't even on the bench. So I think he came out for intros, and I think that was it. He probably went back to go play Call of Duty or something. So,
yeah, not great for the state of the All-Star game or maybe the league as a whole, but ultimately, whatever from our point of view. I think we'll talk about some more fun stuff than the All-Star festivities. I think we've all, like you kind of mentioned, could use this break here. And like Ant, we're going to get some rest in, but we'll talk about what happened before the break right now. So first question I got here on Howl or Foul for you. So last game before the break, the Wolves beat the best team in the NBA, the Oklahoma City Thunder, which in and of itself wouldn't be that surprising, but the Wolves were missing four of their top eight rotation players, obviously. DiVincenzo and Randall have been out for a couple weeks here, but then also Mike has kind of got this dislocated finger thing, and he missed the game. And then Rudy got back spasms the night before against Milwaukee, so he was out as well. So that meant the Wolves had their four starters: Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Nikhil, and Ant were in there. And then Jalen Clark made his first career start, and then Luka Garza, Terrence Shannon, and Rob Dillingham rounded out the stable rotation with Minot and Ingles making like cameo appearances in the game. So not the normal Wolves rotation. I know before the game I didn't give them much of a chance mentally, and they showed me. So Leo, howl or foul, was the OKC win a sign of what future Wolves teams could look like?
I'm a howl on that, absolutely. Really reminded me of the 2022 Wolves back team, the Patrick Beverley, D'Lo, Jared Vanderbilt team, where it was all hands on deck. Like, any night, anyone could be a threat. It was kind of strength in numbers type of deal where, yeah, you know, Ant was going to get his and Cat was going to get his as well, too. But, well, today, I mean, you really only had, or for that game, you really only had Ant, who was going to be the biggest threat. And then it was everyone else, and it was great because it was less stand and watch than we've been used to seeing this year, especially with the way that Ant and Julius have been playing, and even with Rudy kind of like being a non-threat out there. Any player on the court could score for the Wolves. So it just felt like a breath of fresh air seeing the pace and the fearlessness that they were playing, that they were going, they were attacking. It was clear that the young guys were not overwhelmed by the moment. They were willing to take on, like, we don't care if you're the number one team in the West, we're going to come at you. And so we saw Terrence Shannon go off and attack aggressively. We'll talk more about him later, but he just attacked the rim aggressively. Ant had a huge dunk, which we'll get into later as well, too. But everyone's just going. And even Jalen Clark, who got his first start, like you mentioned, he went 1 for 6 and 0 for 4 from perimeter, but he was still really hounding out there on defense. There's a couple of times that he got some stops on Shea or forced him into tough shots. It was just great to see. Everyone was out there. They were flying around. And it was just really, like you said, a look into the future of what the Wolves could be like. Because, again, it's those young players that was off the bench and even starting. And who knows what happens this offseason, but makes you feel a lot more comfortable knowing that, say we lose one or two or maybe even three of our key rotation starters or players, that there's going to be some depth that we have.
Yeah, just thinking about like bigger picture stuff as like the Wolves season has gone on and they've struggled to like reclaim the magic they had last year. Was just kind of thinking about like what if this is the end of a window or whatever, if a true roster shakeup's going to need to happen to kind of regain what they were last year. Like thinking about what kind of team do they want to be specifically with like Rudy. I think there's a lot of thought that like the next great Wolves team will play like five out. We'll play around Ant in the sense of just no one sitting under the rim like Rudy does. And obviously in the short term, they need Rudy. If you just like if they were to like even for next year's team, just dump Rudy into whatever, like the team is going to be worse that especially in the regular season, you're just going to lose a lot more games without Rudy Gobert on your team. But like in the bigger picture sense, I do think like the next championship team will come with or without Rudy on the roster, but certainly like with Rudy not being like a starting caliber player necessarily, or being in a role where they aren't as like stuck to him playing him on every single down the stretch of every game. And so what that looks like is they would need to find just any sort of defense, or they would need to scratch, like the current roster needs to scratch and call for defense, because with Rudy not out there, you're just like the fears that you're not going to have a good enough defense. And so what they do, and you brought up the 2022 team, is they play that high wall defense. They don't let the opposing guard get past them, and they try to, it takes a lot of energy, but you try to rebound on the back end. And it works sometimes. I know, like thinking back to that season, like Luka Doncic killed them one game by just like taking that high wall to the side of the court and then just making a simple pass to make it 4-3. I remember Trae Young did that same thing, was just absolutely torching that defense. So it's like, it's not like the high wall defense and they played it against OKC to really good effect. It's not like it's a good thing to have in your tool belt, but it's not like it's a flawed defensive scheme if it's like the main thing or the only thing you're doing, which a couple years ago, that's basically all they were doing. But I just think my biggest thing would be like if Naz Reid is going to like play a lot of center minutes, like as your starting center in whatever, like when Rudy ages out, when Mike ages out, if Randall's on the team, who knows? Like, can they find enough defense to make that work? And for one night, they did by having Jalen Clark out there, and then Ant and Jaden and Ah were your other guys. So like my question would be, well, in the future you're gonna have Dillingham probably starting. Is that tenable? Like playing Dillingham and Naz Reid as like your center and point guard, does that work? And so I think what's fun about that OKC game is you get to ask a lot of those questions, and at least for one night, they were all answered positively.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is that it was a glimpse into what we could see in the future. The Howard fouls out, was it a sign? Yes, I think it's a sign of what the future Wolves teams could be, but, you know, as you mentioned, we need Rudy, and this isn't the type of team that we could be rolling out game in and game out, so I don't want to let this one game create this false image of like, well, if the Wolves just play like this every game, then they can win. It's like, no, sure. Not really. I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, they're not the best three-point shooting team in the league, but they're, you know, an average three-point shooting team. And against the Wolves, I mean, you had Jalen Williams, who shot 0 for 4 from 3. You had Isaiah Joe, who's like a three-point specialist, went 0 for 4 as well, too. You know, those are some things that you can see the Wolves getting punished on, the way that they're playing, allowing them to shoot those threes. But yeah, it did work out this time, and you know, I don't want to take anything away from how they did, but yeah, it's not quite there yet, but it was positive to see that little bit of a, you know, window into the future of what next year, maybe not next year, but maybe in a couple of years, what could be bubbling there.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just important, like, never take away too much from a single NBA game. Right. just because it's just not worth it. The biggest thing was like their offense against the Thunder have been the league's best defense all year in a similar sense to last year's Wolves team. They're so far ahead of the pack defensively. To be able to score, I mean, they didn't have Caruso. Obviously, we talked about the Wolves guys that were out, but for them to be able to score like and have the offense look like it did was impressive. You mentioned like Shannon, Dillingham, like both of those guys were like getting the ball and pushing. I mean, especially Shannon, who was so fun to watch in that game. Like they were just pushing the ball right away. And that has always been like a low hanging fruit thing for the Wolves offense. It's just like, you're not a good half court offensive team. Why are we not trying to push the ball? I mean, some of it is like Rudy doesn't do that as well as other players, but like they tried it with Randle a little bit. Like it's just such an easy thing to do that they just haven't done. And then defensively, they did such a good job on Shea, who either is going to win the MVP or finish runner up behind the guy who's won it the past two seasons. For them to hold him to 24 points on 6 of 21 shooting, he did have 11 free throw attempts as the crowd rains down free throw merchant chants on him, fair or not. I thought what they did against him, and he missed some shots he probably usually makes, but what they did against him was impressive. And again, like you don't take too much away. OKC had a rough travel schedule. They played at their home arena the night before and they were down 21 heading into the fourth quarter and then won that game. So I'm sure like the crazy emotional swing had a part to play on them playing. But like, I just think, I don't know if like when and if like the next like a Rudy Gobert-less team will happen, because I do think, honestly, I think Rudy's going to come back and play way better next year than he did this year, just because I don't believe that like the downward slide he's been on this year is who he is. I'm not saying he'll be back to winning Defensive Player of the Year again, but like I think he'll be, instead of, I mean, whatever, it's a made up number, but like if he's been 20% worse this year than last year, I would expect him to be like 5% better than this year. So still not as good, but like I don't think this, what he's been the first two thirds of the season, is representative on where his career is headed. Mike Conley is probably, that's probably less true for him, just because he's much older, but I also don't think, I think Mike is still a rotational player in this league, and we've already seen the Wolves kind of take him out of the starting role, put Dante in there. It's just impressive. I think like just having Clark and Dillingham, they've both been, I mean, Clark just joined the rotation a few games ago and Dillingham's been up and down, and Shannon, like these are the type of players that the Wolves are just going to have to hit on to make, like we've seen teams like Denver struggle, although Denver's not struggling at all on anything right now, but like we've seen other teams, Phoenix maybe, like struggle to find rotation players without like paying big money. And so having second round picks, late first round picks, guys you traded, in Dillingham's case, a lot of draft capital for, even if inconsistent, play well against other solid teams.
Yeah, the final thing I'll say about that game against the Thunder is when you talk about some of the young guys, I mean, there are going to be still some holes for them to fill, especially, say, in a post-Rudy world and however many years that is. I wonder if him missing that game against the Thunder made the rest of the team rebound so much harder. You got 14 rebounds out of Naz, which is really not like him. And the Thunder were playing their full front court. I mean, Chet Holmgren played 30 games. Granted, it was his third game back. Isaiah Hartenstein was in there. And, you know, he, for some reason, only played 27 minutes. But they had their two main guys in there, and the Wolves are mixing it up. So, like I mentioned, Naz with 14. I mean, how many times is Luka Garza going to get 6 offensive rebounds? I mean, he had 8 for the game, and that's, you know, I think he's a good offensive rebounder, but is that something, I mean, we saw what Luka Garza on his worst days looks like. And, you know, I don't know if him getting 8 points to 8 rebounds is something we could be relying on in the future. But, you know, Terrence Shannon got 6. I mean, Rob Dillingham even got 2 offensive rebounds too. So it was very evident that the rest of the team's like, all right, we don't have Rudy to sit there and clean up the easy boards. Like, we all got to mix it up. And I think that is key for them. Even when Rudy comes back, they have to continue to be aggressive on the boards.
Yeah, for sure. It was kind of reminiscent of game 2 of the Denver series where they, I mean, on any given night, I mean, Rudy's always going to be like kind of dragged down the offense, even if he ignore kind of the hands and catch stuff. Like, so when the defense can paper over any Rudy missing Rudy stuff, then it obviously just makes everything so much easier. A couple things from this game I thought were impressive is OKC kind of came back and tied it in the third quarter. And I was kind of impressed with, now in my head, I remember tweeting out like the Wolves had missed like a dozen straight three pointers. And it's not like, OKC shot well from three, easy for me to say. But I just remember thinking, if they just hit like 30% of their threes the rest of this way, they're going to win the game. And that did happen. Now neither team shot well, but I just thought the Wolves were like generating easy looks over and over and over again, which was super impressive given who they were playing. It was just, we'll move on to the next game. I thought it was an important win because like, especially when OKC did tie it up, I kind of had a tweet drafted that was kind of like, yeah, like in and of itself, this loss is not a big deal. Like they just lost to the best team in the league without their four players. And then the second part of that tweet is going to be like, but you lose the opportunity for more losses when you lose the night before against the Bucks team missing their two best players. So it was kind of, as the season has gone, it was probably one of their best wins, coming straight off one night later of one of their worst losses of the year, in my opinion. Not the worst team they've played, even without Dame and Giannis. The Bucks are probably still have more talent than, honestly, the first time Kyle Kuzma scored a bunch of points and beat him. but still, just an incredibly frustrating loss. The Wolves shot less than 38% from the floor, less than 23% from three. Just a brutal shooting night. Finch actually, I don't remember if it was before or after the OKC game, did say he watched the film and kind of wasn't as frustrated on a second watch, just because he just felt like they missed a ton of shots. So my how far for you is, Leo, is the Milwaukee loss was mostly just a bad shooting game. What do you think?
I'm going to say foul for this. Yes, the bad shooting was a big reason why, but there were some other reasons as well, too. Gary Trent Jr. had what we at Canada Scoop is called MPE. We call that a medium player explosion. While Kuzma played so well that the Bucks traded one of Giannis' best friends for him. It was the second game of that. He had just played so well that they traded for him, right? And so Kuzma continued to play well against us, and it just really felt like the Wolves had a lot of "I dare you to beat us" type of energy to this. They're like, "All right, well, you know, Gary Trent, like, all right, we'll take those long twos and like we'll let you shoot the long twos, or like we'll let you shoot the threes," and he did, and he made them. The shooting variance, like I said, had a big impact, but I just felt like that intensity was lacking. When you compare the way and energy that they played against the Thunder, there was so much more desperation, urgency in the way that they played, and they were getting into the ball that they weren't doing against the Bucks. It was quite obvious that they really weren't as scared about the Bucks, and they tried and almost succeeded and just, all right, we'll just do a late push and we'll win. And they might have, but I felt like overall they lost because they played to survive and they didn't really play to go and crush them. And I know that it's easy to kind of go back and say that now that it's over, but the process wasn't necessarily bad on the offensive end. As you said, there's a lot of wide open shots they should have made. Even at the end, there was a couple, you could argue if Ant's last two shots were good shots or not. I mean, we've seen them make them, and they weren't the most contested when he got the shots up. But, there was an opportunity for them to win, and they couldn't. So, it was very deflating. I had a lot going on that day, so it just kind of piled onto it. I was watching it from my phone amid another California power outage at the time. But, yeah, I think just chalking it up to only bad shooting, I think, doesn't sum it up for me, so I'm going to say foul. But what do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with you. The one thing I kind of found is I wasn't there that night, but a lot of the media questions were about like the end of game sequence, which is certainly like important from that game, because I thought like the offense wasn't great down the stretch of the games. The second or third to last possession, Ant took just what I thought is just an awful step back instead of trying to get to the basket. One thing I actually, once Finch, so they were down two with the ball, they had a timeout left, decided not to call it. Ant brings the ball up court, kind of tries to surveys the defense, sees Brook Lopez dropping back and takes kind of a step back three. Honestly, that, like the outcome of that shot, once they didn't call timeout, I kind of, in a way, am fine with it. I'm not loving the process to get there, but ultimately, like, Ant has been terrible on two-pointers all season and is having one of the best three-point shooting seasons ever. So I'm not terribly broken up with the shot he got there. Like, okay, so Ant's shooting 46% on two-pointers this year. Like, what if he were to drive to the rim in that sense, in that point in the game, with Lopez standing right there, would there have been enough time for kick out? Not sure. But, like, what are the chances he hit a three are like 40%, right? Even if it's a step back, I would still say 38 to 40%. So, like, what are the chances that he makes a two-pointer? Because you got to take into account that the two-pointer just sends you to overtime where there's still, like, 50-50 to lose. Like, if he gets to the rim there, I still don't, like, he just hasn't been good from there all year from, like, driving on layups. Again, he shouldn't. So I don't, like, the chance of him hitting a three there are similar enough to him driving to the lane and hitting a two that I was just, I don't know, I just didn't, that part didn't frustrate me. Now, I think they probably should have called the timeout, but on the flip side there is the last time they did that, Ant kind of went rogue and ignored the play call. So I'm sure that was a part of it with Finch. So the actual result didn't bother me. I just think the process needs to be way, 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 way better in that sort of situation. And then that aside, the biggest part of that game to me is the Wolves went down. I don't have how much they went down by, but they were down big, down double digits in the first quarter. So much so that they had like a 13-0 run in the second quarter and they were still down three. That to me, that was the biggest point, because if they're only down a couple points instead of double digits, then when they go on that 11-0, 13-0 run, then they're up five, they're up six, and they run away with that game. And like, it's kind of like the same effort, same focus and lesser team stuff that we've been dealing with all year, or maybe even all of Ant's career. And I don't know, I guess you'd rather have it this way than the other way, where they can't beat good teams, or where Ant doesn't perform against good teams. But it is frustrating to kind of see it pop back up again.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, when we talk about the clutch time situation, I agree with you on all that the process needs to be better. And we talked about it, I think, a couple of episodes ago, too, about, you know, the Wolves have fixed their clutch time performances. And I think we talk about, okay, well, what's the process? What kind of shots are they getting? And the last two shots of the game against the Bucks were just kind of going ISO. And the play right before that, when the Wolves did get like, I think, or tied the game or took a 1-point lead, was when Naz Reid Ant drove and then it found Naz in the corner for wide open three, which he drained. And I don't want to overreact, like, okay, well, yeah, revisionist history, let's just get Naz Reid the ball, he would have scored there at the end. But the process has been better. You can't just play 1-on-5, and I think Ant does have a little bit of that, you know, pissing contest DNA in him, where he's like, no, I'm going to show him. Like, you know, I've missed so many, now it's my time. Where it's like, yes, maybe it will be your time, but, like, let's try and get the best shot possible, whether it's you or not. Like, you don't have to take, you can create the best shot for someone else. And I don't think he's a selfish player, but I think he just has a little bit of, like, I don't want to say too much confidence, because that's what makes him great, but, you know, it's like he just needs to be a little bit smarter.
Tunnel vision, maybe?
Yeah, that tunnel vision, right? It's like he needs to be a little bit smarter, I think, in that point where it's, you know, you're going to have a wall waiting for you at the rim, and you know you can get your step back anytime, but, like, those aren't the only two options, right? So, for me, I like to see a little bit more of that improve as they continue to go on, because they continue to play these clutch games, and it's something that still hasn't been 100%, I think, he's figured out yet.
For sure. And to go back to kind of the original question I had for this game of, was it just mostly bad shooting night? And as lame as, like, the analysis is, I really do think, like, most of what happened there was just a bad shooting game. And I have, and it is, like, no fun analysis. And it's like, if a coaching staff came up with that, you'd be like, well, that's lame. But I do think it played a very outsized role in this game, and I have stats to back it up, because, like, to me, that's like such an eye test thing that you can't. But Synergy has a stat where it takes every shot and it measures based on all the factors you can pretty much think of what's the shot clock at, what type of shot, from where, where's the nearest defender, all that, and and gives you basically a shot percentage or a points per shot for each for shot. And it doesn't take into account who is shooting it, so it's basically measuring for an average shooter. And so you might, I know, like, people, when I come up with the, or when I show these stats, like, people's eyes glaze over, so I get it. But just know that, like, it's not just like a random thing. Like, they've done a lot, Synergy's done a lot of work with this number, and and it's pretty dead on. Like, if you go look at like league-wide shooting numbers, like, it all kind of matches up. Obviously, it's, like, it makes sense. It would. But so the Wolves in that game, they should have shot 1.11 points per shot. On an average shooting night, they would have had 1.11 points per shot. What the actual results that night were 0.85 points per shot. And given the number of shots they had that night, that's 27 missing points. That on an average shooting night, they would have had 27 missing points. And that's not to mention whatever long rebounds came from, like, the Bucks scored on them. So, like, that's just, to me, such a huge number. And you might say, well, that probably happens every night. This is the Wolves' second worst shooting night in terms of, like, being behind their synergy points per shot of all season. The first one was the second, when they lost back-to-back games in Portland, it was the second game that was an even worse night. So it's not like, well, I talk about process over results. This is the ultimate results thing. And, like, so I wouldn't even say, like, the process shouldn't be looked at better. But, like, ultimately the result, like, they did get open shots and they just didn't go down. But ultimately, if you come back at me with that's just lame analysis, then I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. How many Jalen Clark wide open layups did he miss that game where he just arms him like 1 foot from the, and I'm not blaming, I mean, he's a rookie still. And, you know, he's not the most offensive talented player. He doesn't have the best touch, but I mean, that did make me think about, you know, are the Wolves one of the teams with the worst touch around the rim? I mean, you got Rudy Gobert. That's probably the easiest person to kind of be like, all right, he has terrible touch around the rim. But when Jalen Clark was just, you know, short arming those and there, he's literally staring like at the ground after he misses it, like in a live ball situation, like, how did I just miss that? You know, that adds up. And so, yeah, the Wolves lost by 2 points. Shouldn't have lost that game, but, you know, we move forward, right?
Yeah. So the stat I quote also does it for each player, obviously. So Jalen Clark missed all his field goals. But, like, on average, he would have had 1.17 points per shot. So, like, just with, like, him, he missed four what Synergy calls a high-quality shot. He missed four. Like, that's, like, just an insane number. Like, that just from him missing layups, like, they lost that game. But it's not to say, like, they still should have won that game because of all the other stuff we talked about. But
yeah,
I did want to, I mostly just wanted to get my stats in there because I do find those, I do enjoy that stat. Just because, like, it, like, one thing I like doing is when people come up with, like, almost sports cliches, they're like, well, this team always does this. If you can find, like, an actual number to either prove or disprove, like, baseball is a perfect example. Fans, in my experience, always get really frustrated when there's, like, a runner on third, one out, and the guy can't hit a simple lazy fly ball to score the runner from third. And what I always see in a comment section is like, oh, my team is always terrible at that. And, like, I know where to, you can go look on Fangraphs, like, find that stat. How often does a team convert a runner on third? And it's like, every time someone does that, I come up with, like, the team is dead average at that. Like, it's just such, like, a fan buy, or, like, every team thinks they have a bad coach. Every team thinks their third base coach is terrible. Like, so if you can find something to, like, actually point at, it's like, no, that's not true. It's always helpful. So maybe I'm complaining too much about bad shooting night, but at least I have a number to throw at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, going back to the OKC game a little bit, the Wolves played three rookies in that game. Jalen Clark, Terrence Shannon, and Rob Dillingham. Jalen Clark is technically a rookie because he didn't play at all last year. So Paolo Leo, the Wolves should continue playing all three rookies of Clark, Dilly, and Shannon every night, even when they get some of their reinforcements back from injury.
Yeah, I mean, I'll also shout out Terrence Shannon as well, too. I mean, he also had a pretty good game against the Bucks. I mean, he played 20 minutes in that game as well, too. 11 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. So, but I'm for this, I need to continue playing all three of them every night. I am a foul for this. And the reason I say foul is that, yes, I mean, once Mike and Julius, hopefully when they're back, and even Dante when they get back, there's just playing not enough minutes to go around in the game for all of them. I mean, unless they're thinking of playing that failed Warrior style where they'd want to play like 10 guys, like 15 minutes a night or whatever, that there's just, you know, I would say one of those three rookies should probably get a look. And it really just depends on the matchup between them, because I think if Mike is having a stinker, like, you know, his legs are under him, his shot's not falling, he's getting beat on defense or whatever, he's just not going, then maybe give Rob a shot, you know, as another primary playmaker, ball handler. If Nikhil or Jaden are getting into foul trouble, which happens a lot, or maybe both of them are getting into foul trouble, then yeah, maybe that's time to call in Jalen Clark as that kind of wing stopper, right? And if Ant or Julius just can't get going on offense, or, you know, they're in foul trouble as well, or whatever the case is, then maybe give TJ a shot, because he was obviously very, very effective at creating his own offense, attacking off the dribble and transition. So I think it really depends on those matchups. Like, what did they need? And if so, you call on one of them. And, you know, in the ideal situation, you know, in the future, all three of them will be getting steady roles. But in the meantime, yeah, I'm foul because I don't think there's enough minutes for all three of them. Feel the same, Ryan, or what do you think?
Yeah, I do agree. I think in the short term, this isn't going to be an issue, just because, or maybe even long term too. Like, we might get to the end of the season every single stretch being like, well, when everyone's healthy, what are we going to do? It's like, well, that's a good problem to have at that point. Let's try to get everyone healthy. Or just like... Yeah. Like, the minute we get healthy, maybe someone will miss a game. I don't think that, like, these guys are going to get to all play every single game the rest of the year. Like, I don't think, like, Dante's not going to be back playing right when they come back from the All-Star game. So that's going to open up minutes for Dillingham. I would like to see them continue to play at least 9 guys, if everyone's healthy. So if they have all 8 of their top 8 guys healthy, still, think Jalen Clark's probably the easiest guy to keep working in there. So keep playing him. I understand if Rob ends up getting DMPs, people aren't going to like it. I don't necessarily disagree. I see the logic in either way, but I think for now, continuing to get them as much reps and positive. Like, my thing is always like, the garbage time is just that, is garbage. Like, it just doesn't. Getting any of them minutes, like, in an actual game with actual NBA rotation players is, like, the most important thing. I just think if and when people kind of come back, there's going to be a lack of minutes again, like we talked about early in the year. But at that point, it's just going to be a good problem to have, because they've already lost a game or two now because of these injuries, which you can't complain about because they were so darn healthy to start the year. But it does impact your roster. But it's been really fun to watch these three guys, because just with the second apron stuff and whatever salary cap stuff, who knows if Randall, I mean, Naz Reid is going to be a free agent. To me, that's like your number one priority in the offseason, to make sure Naz Reid is back on the team. But like, if Nikhil's not on the team next year, that's a role for Jalen Clark. But ultimately, I do think if in a game that they have all their 8 guys, those are the players that should be taking most of the minutes still.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. And I think it's important to keep a little bit of perspective, because at one point, Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels were coming off the bench too as young guys. They didn't start right as, you know, in their rookie seasons. I mean, they were coming off the bench for Malik Beasley, or Josh Okogie was getting minutes over them. And, you know, it took time. And I think for this core, I really love seeing them continue to root for each other to continue, because that's the idea, right? Is that you have your Naz, your Ant, and your Jaden is like, okay, well, that's like your true young core. And then at the even younger core now is that you have like your Jalen Clark, your Terrence Shannon, and your Rob Dillingham. Now, granted, they're not as high of maybe say like overall draft picks all combined, or maybe their talent's a little bit different, but you would love to see them continue to grow and maybe take on a larger role in the future. But in the meantime, they have to continue to stay ready, stay positive. It sucks that, you know, I wish I could include Josh Minot in there, but, you know, he's kind of fallen really deep into the doghouse with Finch there. So it looks like he's not going to be come out anytime soon. And Luca, you know, to me, I'm not saying he's never going to play in the NBA, but I mean, I think he's played enough to prove that. I don't think he's someone that's part of a young core per se moving forward with the Wolves. So yeah, but the other three, really, really optimistic. Love to see them contribute.
Yeah, to touch on Minot and Garza, I just noticed the first Minot got a little bit of playing time, non-garbage playing time in that Thunder game, and I
you got a block.
Yeah, but I did notice an immediate. It may not have been his fault. I didn't watch it back, but an immediate defensive lapse that ended up with an open three. And it's not even to honestly blame him. Maybe like the reason why he's been in the doghouse is his fault or whatever, but like his confidence is clearly shot. And I'm not blaming even Finch for that, but like, it's just the fact that that's clearly what's happening. I don't know how to kind of get him out of that, but it's unfortunate that he hasn't been able to play. And then as far as Luka Garza, I just think, for better or worse, this is the type of player Luka Garza is. And that's, I think that's even a compliment. Like, in the game against OKC, he was valuable. Like, he played well, got offensive rebounds. The offense was fantastic. His, unlike other games, his defense, they were able to hide him. So I just think, like, it's like this weird, there's like this weird small contingent that want Luka to play like a lot of minutes. And then there's this other contingent that like think he's just like the worst player ever. And it's just like, we just, he's the 13th, 14th man on an NBA roster. And he's probably slightly overqualified for that role. Like, it's fine. Like, not everyone has to be amazing or terrible. It's okay to just, be like, I honestly think if Luka were on like a crappy team, people would think he's even better than he is now. Like, oh, just throwing up numbers on whatever bad team.
He would be like a fantasy all-star pickup in like silly season if he was playing for the Washington Wizards or something. Dude would be putting 20 and 10 up for the Washington Wizards every night. But with Luka, yes, I mean, I think I won't go too long about this, but I think his like turnaround ratio where he gets spun around in a circle on defense has to be one of the highest in the NBA. I think that happened in the OKC game too, where, yeah, granted, like the effort's there, but just like the technique and the agility is not, where it's just like, you know, he goes one way, player kind of crosses over, goes the other way, and then he's like left spinning around, like looking like, wait, where'd they go, kind of thing, and the kind of Looney Tunes-esque. But shout out Luka, yeah, great game, was a huge reason, got the bench super hyped, and yeah, I mean, he definitely caught the Thunder off guard for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the rebounding is really, he had a bunch of putbacks in that game. So, yeah. I, as far as guys that only play when a person or two ahead of them is hurt, I think Luka Garza has been as good in that role. if there's a sixth man of the year, like 12th man of the year, Luka Garza would be in the running for that type of award. Yeah, we can move on to our next segment. Apex Alpha, who's the leader of the pack this week? I'm going to go with Terrence Shannon, partially because of his fantastic play in the OKC game. It was fun to watch, like just like a ravenous dog chained up and let loose, and it was just like attacking. It was really fun to watch him just barrel into defenders and make shots. And it was funny. I posted it. Torian Prince drew a charge against him in the Milwaukee game, and I posted about it and I thought it was a terrible call, and then didn't even reverse it on review. And then hilariously, there was like two or three charge calls in that game that all got reversed into blocking fouls. And I'm not even blaming the refs, because I do think it's a tough call. But like, my soapbox here is, can we change the charge rule? It's bad. It's bad. Like, you shouldn't get rewarded for getting in the way. Obviously, there needs to be like some sort of penalty for just like barreling over a defender, but like guys sliding under people and like just only trying to get in the way, which is funny, because I thought like of the charges in the past two games, like Jaden bowling over Dort, I thought was the closest thing to an actual charge, and that was what actually got overturned. That's my soapbox. I don't like the charge rule. Maybe I watch too much college basketball, where it's 10 times worse than it is in the NBA. But the other reason Terrence Shannon is the Apex Alpha, and this is the funny thing from the weekend, was that he got his jersey retired at Illinois. He was a fantastic player, knocked my Iowa State Cyclones out of the NCAA tournament last year. Got his jersey, I don't know if it was honored or retired or what the verbiage is there, but they unveiled his jersey, and they did so upside down. If you haven't seen it, go just look up Terrence Shannon jersey retirement. You'll see it. I don't know if you saw the AD kind of came out before Illinois' coach got to the presser and just like apologized to everyone. I saw someone post that video and then put it upside down. I thought that was funny. But yeah, tough look for Terrence, but also I'm sure it was a good night for him and his family getting his jersey honored.
Did they? I saw the pictures of it, but did they end up like fixing it, or is it like, no, we'll fix it later kind of thing?
I'm sure they probably ended up not fixing it right away, but eventually.
There's no way they put it up upside down. You think? Did they?
Yeah, you.
I saw it was like they were about to raise it and it was upside down. But imagine them knowing the whole time it's upside down. They're like, "Why? Well, I mean, I guess we got to put it up." I mean, that's.
I will say, AD, good job. He said something like, "I wasn't involved in that process, but ultimately it falls on me." It's like, thank you, good job, not blaming the stadium ops person. Good for
you. Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. But yeah, Terrence Shannon, I absolutely loved watching him. I think absolutely deserving of Apex Alpha. I'm really excited to see if he continues to carve out a role for him, because I think what he does is something that he can do so consistently, especially on the offensive end. It's kind of the opposite with Jalen Clark, where we know that Jalen's always going to bring a strong defensive end, whether or not he's racking up fouls. But on defense, he's going to be bringing it. But on offense, not so consistent, where, I mean, we've seen the last couple of games, Jalen just is, kind of in his own head, as you mentioned, with some of the other players, where he just knows that he's short-arming shots. But Terrence is just, the way that he plays doesn't rely on a jump shot so much, where that he'll take any little crevice that the defense gives him in an attack. So yeah, hopefully he continues that. Go ahead.
Touching on Shannon a little bit more, one of the reasons why, like, if you're wondering, like, why were the Wolves able to get him at this pick, was kind of the situation that happened to him in college. There was a court case against him. Basically, someone at a bar said that a woman said that he assaulted her, sexually assaulted her. And it was a big case. They had to, like, the team suspended him. Eventually, he did get back on the court. And it's a tough thing to talk about, because I think you and I like believe women when they accuse people of stuff like this. And I think there, if you read the, I really would like implore people to go read the actual details of it, because it is like more complicated than, because you don't want to just like shit on this woman who it seems like was legitimately assaulted, but it may have been a case of mistaken identity. And it wasn't like he was proven innocent. It wasn't just like the situation where courts messed it up or something. Like, he was able to prove that it wasn't him. But that really did tank his stock a little bit, just because I don't think like he got the attention of how quality of a player he was. But yeah, I did want to bring that up while also acknowledging like I think people, like the worst type of people, just want to shit on the woman. And I guess theoretically maybe she's awful. I think that's very unlikely and shouldn't be the assumption, but it did tank his stock a little bit. And I'm sure the Wolves did their due diligence on that situation, and he's been clearly worth that selection where they took him.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the case. I think that it's a very deep topic that, I think I'd be more than happy that we could talk about it, in the future as well, too, because a lot of teams, as we even see in this year, they don't do the due diligence, or they don't care to do the due diligence to figure out what's the character or the situation off the court with the player. And with TJ's, I mean, I read a lot of the court documents as well, too, and I read a lot of it, because that's important to me, at least personally, as you said, Ryan. You and I are both people that care a lot about women's rights, and we do care about making sure that we're rooting for players that we like. I mean, that's why we love Kat so much, right? Right? Because he was a player that we really liked, that he really stood up for a lot of things. And so with TJ, yeah, I mean, I know one of the things, I won't belabor this point, but that, he came out against, I think sometimes the better judgment of other people who were accused of doing such things, that he came out and testified himself in court about like that. And that was like a really big kind of indicator of like, okay, most people don't do that because it's too risky, but he was willing to kind of prove his innocence, or at least that, as much as he could. But moving on, with the Apex Alpha, I will say my Apex Alpha is Naz Reid. Two words, baby, Naz Reid. He started off the week slow against Cleveland. It was a really tough matchup, obviously, against Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. They're a great team. And so he didn't have the great night, got greatest of nights. And he also struggled out the gates against Milwaukee as well, too, just like the rest of the team did. But he scored 7 points in a row at the end of the game, the last 7 points for the Wolves, including a go-ahead triple that I mentioned earlier in the corner. And so you kind of see him get his confidence back, which all kind of led into a crescendo against the Thunder. So on national televised game, right before the All-Star break, Thursday night, TNT, number one opponent, in the West, he goes up and he flexed as the best player on primetime television. He was the best player that was out there. He had a game-high 27 points. He missed. His three-point shot wasn't even falling, which, again, most of us obviously know that Naz Reid is one of our best three-point shooters. He went 3 of 9 from three-point range. So he missed 6 of them, but for the entire game, he only missed 7 shots. So that means he went 11 to 12 from 2-point range. And that's just like crazy efficiency from him. And so he also had 14 rebounds, as I mentioned. That ties a season high for him as well, too. And I think ultimately, above all else, other than him having another good game, because he always has, you know, he's always prone for these breakouts, is that it proves that he should be a starter. Now, I'm not going to make this a whole discussion about Julius Randle or Rudy Gobert, you know, what's that going to be? But I mean, I think Naz Reid, yes, we love him as that kind of sixth man that he won last year, the award, and as that punch off the bench. But I think it's time that he needs to start. And I think he's really proven that now.
Yeah, I agree. I also, like you, don't need to have the who should start, Randle or Naz. Hopefully Randle's back that first game out of the All-Star break or soon after. But I do think it's kind of one of those things where you can argue day and night if he should start over Randle. But ultimately, the coaching staff shows they're not going to do that. So ultimately, it's kind of not worth talking about. And I kind of, my thing has always been, if the game calls for it, have him close the game. That's right. The more important thing. But I do agree with you that even in the, since Randle's been out, he's proven that he's a starting caliber player in this league. He probably proved that a long time ago. So if the Wolves do decide to move off of Randle in the off season, which does seem to be something that wouldn't make sense, especially if they can do some sort of sign and trade where they're getting some sort of compensation back, or they get rewarded somehow for helping out some team that wants Randle, who I do think has kind of gotten unfairly blamed for a lot of stuff this year. I thought maybe the first third of the season he wasn't playing well, but the next third I thought he was playing fantastic. And I agree with you, like, especially next to Rudy, I just think those two fit so well, kind of similar to the way Kat and Rudy did last year, where Naz is obviously not as good of offensive player as Kat, but maybe is more fits in whatever offensive role better, or fits defensively. I don't know. But I think when Naz has started, we've seen like what the idea was when they traded Kat, was like, well, we feel like we can get X percent of Kat back with Naz. And he's just been fantastic. Like, it just, I said it earlier, but like, their number one thing this offseason has to be to bring Naz Reid back. And they'll be in the catbird seat, or whatever you want to call it, to do that, because they'll be under the apron. They'll have his bird rights. They'll be able to offer basically more than anyone else. That just has to be, like, even if I don't think it'll happen, but even if Randle opts in, they'll still have money to go get Naz. Maybe it'll cost them Nikhil, but at this point, while that isn't an ideal situation, like, they just. There cannot be a situation where Naz Reid walks out the door in the offseason.
Yeah, have you ever watched, I don't know if it's multiple stadiums or maybe it's just one stadium that they do, like, it's like the, during a timeout, they'll have like this race on the Jumbotron where it's like, oh, the donut versus the coffee versus the whatever. It's like, oh, if the coffee wins, section 205 wins like free like prize or something like that. You can almost have that where it's like a two-person race where it's a donut and the coffee racing. And on one side, you have Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And the other one, you have Naz Reid, where it's like at the beginning of the season, it's like, okay, Naz Reid, who's like one of the runners, like he's getting out to this big lead. And then all of a sudden, here comes Nikhil coming up. The other side's like, oh, Nikhil took the lead. Maybe he's the guy we should resign. And now Naz Reid is kind of blasted forward again. It's like, okay, no. Naz Reid is a guy that we should be re-signing in the number one priority this offseason. So, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm excited, but like a little nervous, but mostly excited that hopefully, you know, Naz Reid is someone that we can really lock up, because not only is he such a great player on the court, but he has such a strong connection with the fan base and the community out there. So he's a guy that, you know, anything can happen, as we saw this offseason, but hopefully he's one of those guys that can retire as a lifer with the Timberwolves.
Yeah, especially if they lose Naz, it just makes the Kat trade look all that worse. Because, like, to me, the main thing with trading Kat would be to, like, well, we now can keep Naz, we can keep Nikhil, we can keep these players. So if you're just going to end up losing Kat and Naz, like, that just feels like the worst. Like, you might as well have just kept Kat and pushed with last year's version of the team. But right. Probably jumping ahead of ourselves a little bit, because we still got a third of this regular season left and hopefully some playoff basketball here. But next segment, prey of the week. Who did the Wolves make their prey? Leo, I bet you I can guess who your candidate's going to be.
Welcome home, one Mr. Chet Holmgren. Chet Holmgren is my prey of the week. As Ant said after the game, where they showed him the replay, asked him about that dunk on Chet that he had. And I believe it was the first quarter. He said, welcome home, Welcome home, Chet. I mean, Minnesota's finest. And granted, you know, Chet, as I said earlier in our episode, it's just his third game back, so he's still kind of working himself into form there. But you could tell when Ant went up to go throw that down, Chet kind of like realized that the last thing, like, oh shoot, like this is Anthony Edwards. This isn't like Jalen Clark going up for a dunk. So he didn't bail on the block attempt, but he definitely didn't try and get in front of him. He kind of jumped and, you know, he could have committed a little bit more, but maybe he didn't want to foul him or whatever the case was. But the pictures make it look way worse than it really was, because it's just another beautiful shot that you're going to see all over the place of Ant smashing there, one on Chet. And so I would say also as well, to the end of the third quarter, Terrence Shannon also almost got Chet as well too. He went up for I think up the right baseline, and he kind of cocked that way back like he was gonna slam that like a dunk contest type of dunk. And I think Chet got the better, I think Chet got the block on that, but again, he almost got ended twice in the same game. So, you know, Chet's gonna kind of go down into that same graveyard of bodies that Ant has just absolutely posterized the season. So shout out Chet. I'll also say as well too, I forgot to mention when you talked about TJ as your apex alpha, he also had a super impressive dunk over Isaiah Hartenstein as well too. I think it was early in the second quarter where I think Isaiah kind of chased down or kind of caught him from behind. But yeah, TJ is always like a threat to throw down a huge dunk, and he almost got two of them against the Thunder, but just came up just a little bit short. So, but that's my prayer of the week.
Yeah, did you see what Adidas posted right after? They had they had a social media, it was a clip of like a crime scene body.
Iced tea, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And the little number sign, or indicator, like you'd see at a crime scene, was the number 7, which is Chet's number. So Adidas was quick on the draw with the social media presence. Obviously, I'm guessing that Ant would throw up a poster at some point. It's obviously an easy pick. But my prayer of the week was, we kind of talked about earlier, is SGA, just because I just thought the Wolves did such a good job, whether it was Clark or Nah or Jaden guarding him and keeping him in check. Like I said, 6 of 21 shooting for a guy that's leading the league in points. Just very impressive what they were able to do, kind of a whole team defense thing. And it was fun watching. One thing I like about, I don't love the foul grifting aspect of it, but watching him in person, he was always like out there smiling. I do enjoy that. Like, he having fun with it. When the chance came down, the free throw merchant chance came down, he just smiled at it, didn't do anything else. So that I enjoyed that. But I thought the Wolves did such a good job defensively on him in that game.
Yeah, I think any matchup against Shea is always going to be under the microscope, and even more so when it's on national TV as one of the last games before the All-Star break. If not, it was the last game, right, where you have Ant going against Shea, and, you know, Ant didn't have a great game either, but obviously he pulled out the W. And so I think watching Shea laugh, during that chant was pretty funny. And, you know, by all intents and purposes, he's a great guy. And I think, you know, there's a fun little rivalry that he has with the Wolves. I wouldn't say, you know, personally, but obviously he has that connection with Nikhil as well too, where I think it was two seasons ago, where they got to beat the Thunder in the play-in, and Nikhil had a really, really good game against Shea. So yeah, love seeing him try to fight off the Wolves as usual.
Yep. I guess next segment I had written down here, I think we can kind of just skip it unless you had more All-Star game thoughts. Like I said, I didn't watch a single thing of it. It sounded like kind of a crap show with Kevin Hart and Mr. Beast and whoever the heck else they got. Like, for me, it's just like, and Ant didn't play and LeBron didn't play. And it's like, last year, what frustrated me last year is, I think it was last year, Cat scored 50 and then people just made fun of him. And Jaylen Brown competed in the dunk contest and didn't do great and people made fun of him. And it's just like, and then this, it feels like the same type of people are the first ones to complain about no one tries in the All-Star game. It's like, well, because anytime that you try, you get shit on. So, like, can we? And so, from what I saw, like, the players weren't the problem, and it was TNT in their presentation. And like, I keep having Draymond Green on. I don't understand why they just, all these networks put on so many people that like just seemingly hate basketball, or at least are trying to like grift their way into viewership by hitting. I don't know. It's just not a great night. And I thought it, like, my feed, which is usually all basketball, was kind of consumed by the SNL 50 thing. So I'm sure the ratings or whatever were terrible.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not too much substance to take out of this as far as Wolves related. I mean, obviously Draymond being, you know, so public in his, you know, how Rudy lives rent-free in his mind. I mean, like, we're not the biggest fan of Draymond, but I mean, he was on there and he was really openly criticizing how much he hated the way that the NBA did the All-Star format this year, which is like a typical Draymond thing to say. But dude, like, you're getting paid to try and promote this game. And the fact that he really went in on it and he was just like trying to demolish it is like, dude, you're not even playing in the game. Like, you, there's a reason you're not in this. So, like, why don't you stick to trying to get better instead of just... I saw a tweet. I think it was by Molly Morrison. I think she works for Bleacher Report. Mm-hmm. Used to cover, I think, the Grizzlies. She had said that one thing made clear from this All-Star break, especially today's game, was that hopefully Draymond Green never retires, because once he does, he's going to be on air so much as to be unbearable. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the two things that I could kind of take away from this All-Star weekend, and especially in regards to the Wolves, is that Leonard Miller played in the Rising Stars game, which was, you know, I said earlier, was really cool to watch. And he low-key kind of carried his team of it. He did really well. He put up a lot of points, and he has some cool highlights in there. So always love seeing Lenny try and develop. Again, who knows where his development's going to go. He's still in his early 20s. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But second thing was Ant got to reunite with Luka. Those of you who didn't, I'm not talking about Luka Doncic, not talking about Luka Garza. I'm talking about there's a little fan that he has, I believe from Minnesota, part of a Make-A-Wish thing, where it's a six-year-old child that was diagnosed with leukemia. And it kind of made the rounds, I think it was a month ago or so, a month or two ago, where he got to meet Ant backstage, in the tunnels, and he gave Ant an orange wristband that says "Love Like Luka," and Ant's worn that every single game ever since Luka's given it to him, and they kind of have this bond. And so Luka got to go to the All-Star game. He got to ask Ant a question during the media presser. It was really cute to watch. I urge you all to watch it if you haven't. That Ant's kind of answering these questions. You could tell Ant does not want to be there. Obviously he didn't play, but he didn't really want to answer questions. He had his sunglasses on. He was just kind of like dismissing a lot of questions, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's cool, I guess. Yeah, it's fun, but yeah, whatever. It's kind of nonchalant until he sees Luka in the crowd and says for him to ask him a question. And he takes his sunglasses off and he just has like ear-to-ear smile. It is a really, really cute moment where he got to and I say, hey, what's up, man? Like, how you doing? And yeah, I feel bad in retrospect because Luka asked Ant, like, well, how many points are you going to score in the All-Star game? And then I'm sure Ant knew he wasn't going to play, but he's like, oh, I don't know, man. You know, I'm going to try and get as most as I can, but, you know, hopefully your wristband brings me luck. And, you know, he ultimately didn't play in the game. But yeah, so those were kind of my two favorite things of it. We got to see, you know, Kat and Ant hug it out as well, too, which I'm sure made us all feel a certain way about that. But, you know, it is what it is. It's over. I'd rather not spend too much more time belaboring. I think one thing that's only worse than the All-Star game and how it is currently is just listening to people on social media continue to shit on it. It's like, dude, okay, we know it sucks. Like, let's just kind of move on. You know, it's a thing that happens. It's not going away. You know, we're the NBA is not canvassing Blue Sky or social media to see what ideas we have. Their corporate sponsors are going to continue to do whatever they want to do. It was clear that TNT is their last time broadcasting, you know, the All-Star game for the next handful of years. And they tried to fit as many ads as they could in there. So I guarantee you, if you watch it, I would say the ad to basketball ratio was probably like 90 to 10, like 90% ads, 10% actual basketball. Yeah. So yeah, it's not worth the rewatch for sure.
Yeah. And for me, it's just like, I implore people, if you don't care about it, like I kind of don't anymore, like just don't watch. It's okay. It doesn't have to be some grand statement or whatever. Just find something else to watch. Like I said, I watched the SNL thing and enjoyed that. Like go watch like White Lotus or something. I don't know. And kind of that brings me into my two words, which is like break time. Like my two words are break time. And I just think like the Wolves All-Star break comes at a good time, specifically for the Wolves, but like maybe for people like you and I and fans, like just like take a step away from basketball. Like the real crunch time of the season is coming. Like all the guys, it was funny, right after the OKC game, everyone like was immediately gone. The only people left were like Ant, like was there, and I think he tried to get out sooner and didn't really want, like he just wanted to leave, and he probably had to get on a plane to San Francisco. But like we only got to talk to Dillingham and Shannon, and like everyone, like I've never seen a locker room that dead when we get in there. Everyone was gone. So I think that's probably a good sign. Everyone's enjoying their break right away. I think it comes at a good time for the Wolves, who are fairly injured. Like, I don't think Mike was, if there was games like right there. I don't think Mike was quite ready to come back. I think he'll be ready when the games come back. Rudy, back spasms, or who knows, he solid enough chance he would have missed another game or two. And then obviously, like, Randall may or may not be back right after the deadline. And then DiVincenzo's, like, late February, early March is kind of what I've heard is kind of a hopeful timetable, but obviously you never know. So I think it's coming at a good time. And then also, like, looking forward, 31-25, the Wolves record. They played the most games out of anyone in the NBA, tied for with a couple of teams. So, like, they'll have some extra rest advantage here without, like, the Lakers, partially due, unfortunately, to the fires, but, like, the Lakers played four fewer games than them. So, yeah, I think the rest comes at a good time. Leo, what are your two words?
My two words are death matters. So a quick, that's what she said. But in all seriousness, I think now's a crucial time for Chris Finch to get guys like Jalen Clark and you know, Terrence Shannon activated. There's 26 remaining games for the Timberwolves, and they're going to come fast. You know, it's, even though they have played the most amount of games, there's not a huge amount of rest. There's not a lot of, there's not an in-season tournament break anymore. There's not an all-star break anymore. And so, yeah, hopefully they use this time, as you said, the break time to heal up. But the depth is going to matter, because if the Wolves are going to put where their money where their mouth is, they have to show how deep they really are. There's been a lot of talk, and even within the players, that they think that they're one of the deepest teams in the NBA. And so if that's the case, then they really, really got to show that. And so I think, you know, even outside of TJ and Jalen, is that, you know, Rob, Joe, and Luca, like, they have to get their heads right. You know, we can't have these, like, okay, well, we're just going to kind of throw you out there, you're going to do really bad. Like, you know, I'm not expecting perfection out of them, but they really need to show that, hey, well, you're part of our secret weapon, which is our depth. So, yeah, depth matters for me. I think All-Star break is really, you know, a great time, like you said, to recuperate. Hopefully for a lot of these players, get right, whether it's physically or mentally right. Right now, the Wolves sit at seventh in the standings. They're a game behind, one game behind the Clippers, or 1.0 games. So. And they're 3.0 games behind the Lakers and just 3.5 games behind the Rockets. So that might sound like a lot, just given the way the Wolves season kind of goes up and down. But it's absolutely doable. I'm not saying they will end up in fourth, but they hopefully should be able to catch one of those three teams slip in there. Rockets have lost a lot of games recently. Some of their players will be coming back from injury. The Lakers are kind of in that whole flux right now. Okay, well, adding Luka, but they still don't have a center. And the Clippers, again, they're kind of up and down, but they went three in a row. And, you know, hot on their tails are the Mavericks, Kings, and Warriors, who are all within 2.5 games of taking, you know, the higher seeds in the in-season tournament as well, too. Hopefully the Suns kind of downward spiral continues, and this way the worst that the Wolves can finish will hopefully just be the 10th seed, you know, the bottom seed of the in-season tournament. But yeah, we'll see what happens. It'll be really exciting and really quick upcoming.
Yeah, and one thing working in the Wolves' favor that we didn't really touch on the show is the Wolves have the easiest schedule remaining in the Western Conference. They do start off with I think it's four tough games coming out of the break: Houston, OKC twice, and the Lakers. But then it gets super easy after that. After those four games, they'll have like the 29th easiest schedule in the league. For some reason, Toronto has like by far the easiest schedule. They only play like three playoff teams the rest of the year, which is kind of weird. But like, the Wolves schedule lightens up after this first week back. And one thing, obviously, like we talk about like them playing down to their opponents, but like the difference here was going to be like they played Brooklyn twice in April. Brooklyn is just going to be like, they are all season. They've been losing games, but like, they're going to be trying to lose games. Like, they play Philly down the stretch. What is Philly going to look like? Are they going to, doesn't seem like Embiid's going to be playing much or at all down the stretch of the season. Paul George is like, and there's a difference between playing bad teams and playing teams that are like, just not even like they have two games against New Orleans, three against the Jazz. Like, the Wolves have a lot of easy wins. So if they split, I think, if they split these first four coming out of the break, they're going to be a pretty good spot, especially looking up at like Phoenix has a tough schedule. The Clippers have a really tough schedule. So like they might be a game behind the Clippers, but they got the tiebreaker in the easier schedule. So I would, at least against the Clippers, I feel good about the Wolves being able to catch them.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. That'll do it for Leo and I. We'll be back next week breaking down the first few games of the Wolves have after the All-Star break. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks guys. Make sure you get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!